wanna give love to the city, that's a fact. But you're gonna need help if you wanna make an impact.
Well endowed, you want to be
well endowed
with the Edmonton community.
Things really happen when you find that you're well endowed.
Hi everyone, welcome to ECF's Well Endowed podcast. I'm Anna Alfonso.
And I'm Andrew Paul. Edmonton is full of generous donors who have created endowment funds at Edmonton Community Foundation.
These funds are carefully stewarded to generate money that supports charities in Edmonton and beyond.
On this podcast, we share stories about how these funds help strengthen our community, because it's good to be well endowed.
So, Andrew, I have so many questions about our episode. Have you ever been named an executor? What is probate? What happens if someone dies without a will?
You have questions? I have questions, especially because I was just named as the executor of my parents' estates, and it is quite the daunting process that I believe I have in front of me.
I think there are a lot of people in a similar boat to both of us. We have aging parents, and they have assets, and what do we do? Luckily, we can make it less daunting because every spring, ECF partners with a dedicated team of volunteer estate lawyers to present Estate Administration Week.
And I am actually very excited for this. Estate Administration Week is a series of free presentations that help Edmonton and area residents learn the ins and outs of effectively administering an estate.
These sessions provide information about Estate Administration 101, tax considerations, executor challenges, handling beneficiaries not named in a will, what probate is, and so much more.
This year, Estate Administration Week runs April 15th through 19th in venues across the city and online, and you can find more information in our show notes.
In this episode, Sydney Stewart, who is one of ECF's philanthropy advisors, sits down with Victoria Jones to answer our listeners' and ECF staff members' most pressing questions about estate administration.
Victoria made DeVillers Jones a two-generation law firm when she joined as an articling student in 2012.
She was then called to the Alberta Bar in January 2014 and now proudly practices with Anne DeVillers and David Jones.
Victoria has appeared at all levels of court in Alberta and has appeared at the Supreme Court of Canada. Her practice includes wills, estates, trusts, estate litigation, and administrative law.
Over to you, Sydney and Victoria.
Welcome to the podcast, Victoria. It's great to have you on the show.
Thanks. It's exciting to be here.
I'd like to start by asking you about your experience helping people navigate the complex process of estate administration. Ooh la la.
Ooh la la.
How did you come to this area of law?
I have been practicing in this area for 10 years now, so I am no longer considered a baby lawyer, much to my chagrin. I articled at DeVillers Jones, which is my firm, and Anne DeVillers is one of the, I'm going to say, preeminent estate lawyers in town. She has been on the Alberta Law Reform Institute and redesigned the surrogate rules in 1995. I then redesigned them with the Surrogate Reform Group in the last couple of years, which we'll get to, because there's new ways to get grants of probate and administration. So I've been doing this my whole legal career, and
awesome.
I love it.
Awesome. So it seems like you're the right person to have here today.
Well, I hope so.
So as ECF's preparing to host Estate Administration Week, we asked our listeners and ECF staff to submit their most pressing questions about the process. Are you ready to be put in the hot seat?
Every day.
All of the questions.
Let's
do it. Awesome. Okay. Let's start with Melissa Zapisaki, ECF's grant associate, who has this question.
I currently don't have a will. I'm young, I don't have children, and my affairs aren't complicated. Why is it important for me to have a will?
Most important thing about having a will is to name an executor, which is the person who actually does the work, and to say, this is where I want my stuff and money to go. If you don't do that, the intestate succession provisions are those provisions for people who die without a will. And the government has essentially designed how your estate will be distributed. So if you don't like the intestate succession provisions, you should do a will to make sure what you want happens. And for Melissa, she doesn't have children. She's young. Perhaps working at the ECF, she has a particular endowment that she really enjoys. And so it's great to be able to help that endowment through your will.
I have a follow-up question, if you don't mind. Can we talk about online wills? Now, we're talking about wills.
Oh, yes, we can.
There are will kits. There are online wills. You can go to a lawyer to get your will done. I'm going to imagine that they maybe don't fall all in the same camp. Can you explain what the difference is, knowing that we just really want everybody to have a will?
So for those that have been to any of my Wills Week or estate administration presentations, you know that I personally love a good wills kit will, because I, as the lawyer, will litigate your will, and with your money, I will buy myself shoes. So online wills are fine. Will kits are fine. What you have to do is make sure that you adhere to the formalities, which is if it's typed, you need two witnesses who are not beneficiaries. You can also do a holograph will, it's called, which is all in your own handwriting, date it, and sign it. That is considered a valid will. And those are often deathbed wills. In fact, the most famous one in Canada is a farmer in Saskatchewan. He got stuck under his tractor and he scratched into a bumper, all to mother.
Wow.
And that bumper is on display at the Saskatchewan Law School. So holograph wills are an important way to do it. As I said to Melissa's question, the most important thing is to appoint an executor. You need to appoint someone who can do the job. And also, the will speaks from death. So if you have appointed someone, they can then go and start doing the job. Online wills and wills kits have opened up the ability for people to get wills more easily. But at the end of the day, it is a legal document. It's a powerful legal document. Getting legal advice is not going to hurt you.
Thank you. I think that might help clarify things, because especially with, you know, you can, AI can generate a lot of things these days.
So. AI can get you in a lot of trouble
with
the law these days.
I wanted to address that there are multiple options for, you know,
there
finding,
are.
Creating, getting a will. Thank you. So what happens if someone dies without a will? Who's responsible for their belongings?
So I touched on this a bit earlier with the intestate succession provisions. So it's based on your family structure. If you have a spouse, it generally goes to that spouse. If you have kids but no spouse, it generally goes down to the kids. So for some people, it makes sense. I don't, you know, I would give everything to my spouse regardless, or I would give it down to my kids. But you just need to check that your family structure matches those provisions. Who's responsible for their belongings? Technically, no one. No one has authority to deal with your estate in any way if you die without a will.
That's interesting.
Yeah.
So this is where it becomes very, very complicated if you do not have a will and you have multiple family members who could be vying for that crock pot or something.
Oh, the crock pots.
Right?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes. Sometimes people will die without a will, but all they have is debt. So there's not necessarily a reason for anyone to administer their estate. CRA sometimes sends letters to the widow of the deceased saying, you owe us. And I have a letter that I write back and say, nah, she isn't in charge. Good luck. Go away.
Ah, very interesting. Okay.
Yeah. So technically, there's no one responsible. No one's in charge when you die without a will. That's why I say appointing an executor is so important, because that's the person who has authority.
Just as a follow-up to that, Victoria, what happens with somebody's debt after they pass away and there's no will, or even if there is a will and, you know, nobody can cover it?
A person's debt when they die is theirs alone. So let's say you die and you have multiple credit cards owing. If there's nothing in your account to pay them, sorry, guys, you're not getting paid. They're unsecured creditors. Secured creditors, think like a mortgage on your house, they've got that house. So they can go after the house to satisfy their debt. But no, the beneficiaries are not responsible to pay out the debts. And the personal representative, which is the overarching term we call executors or administrators of those who die without a will. So personal representative is the legal language in Alberta. They aren't personally responsible for the deceased debts. Okay. they become responsible for those debts if there was enough money to pay them and they didn't pay them but paid the beneficiaries. Then CRA can go after the personal representative. But otherwise, no one's responsible for your debts when you're dead except you.
I see. Okay. So it's up to the executor to ensure those debts are paid off before any of the beneficiaries, which is where I imagine some legal help would be quite handy.
Yes.
Okay. Okay. Very interesting. So we've also received some questions from our social media followers. Lauren from Instagram would like to know, how can I locate a will if I don't know whether the deceased had one?
So this one's a bit more tricky. In BC, they have a wills registry. So you can look it up and see where an original will is being held. We don't have that in Alberta. The best bet you can do is if you knew who the deceased regular lawyer was, it's worth calling their office. Lots of lawyers will draft wills, even if they're just sort of the corporate lawyer for the deceased or the family lawyer. So that's a place to start. Often, you will find amongst their paperwork a copy of a will or a card of a lawyer. Worth calling there. If in the end you've done a thorough search and you can't find anything, you can then apply for a grant of administration, which is when you're saying they died without a will and I'd like to administer their estate, and say to the court, we've looked, we can't find anything. The presumption is they've died intestate without a will. One place to try your best to look is a safety deposit box. Very often people, especially of a certain age, keep their original wills or a copy of their wills in the safety deposit box. Banks require, generally, a copy of the will saying you're the executor to even look in the safety deposit box. It's a vicious little circle. So I generally advise people, keep a copy of the will somewhere in your house, particularly with your important paperwork, because that at least gives people clues as to where to go to find it.
And ideally, we're letting our executors know who they are.
Yes. Yes,
also,
you are.
Can I disclose something very nerdy? So when my husband and I got our wills done, it was recommended to us that we keep a little card on our persons saying that we have a will held at this law office. So we both have those in our wallets.
I have a copy of both of my parents' personal directives, which sometimes it's called a living will or an advanced care directive, in my phone, so that when we register at the emergency room, I can just email them a copy of the personal directive so that the hospital has it on file.
That's incredibly smart. Thank you.
My parents are of an age.
As are mine. I'm going to, I'm filing this away for myself later. Thank you.
Yeah, it's very useful.
Yeah. And part of having a proper estate plan is to appoint someone to oversee the administration of your estate. So this brings us to a great question from Laura Kugler, ECF's Estate and Endowment Associate.
There's a lot of legal language floating around estate administration, and I'd like to know what exactly an executor is.
An executor is a person appointed in a will to administer your estate. If you don't have a will, the court will appoint an administrator. The global term for either an executor or an administrator is a personal representative. Those are all generally interchangeable. There are some technical differences between an executor and an administrator. However, if you have been appointed and call yourself an executor, even though you're technically an administrator, no one's going to care, except that odd judge. Anyway, so the executor is, they're the one in charge. So they're going to get your will. They're going to do all your funeral arrangements, because technically an executor is the one who has that authority, not automatically your spouse or children. Just note that.
That's very interesting.
Yes.
Yeah, okay.
The executor has that authority. Often, if the executor is someone who's not a close family member, they let the family member make those decisions. And I would advise any executor to do that. It's not worth that fight. So then the executor has to collect in your assets, pay any debts, and then get ready to distribute to the beneficiaries. That's the basic thing. The executor is the one who is doing the work.
So those are kind of the core duties of the executor. Basically, to follow, if we're looking at the will as a plan,
yes,
their job is to kind of follow what is laid out in the will and ensure that estate is, I guess, represented.
Yeah, so the will is the roadmap for the distribution.
Okay.
But that's just one step.
Okay.
So they first need to figure out, do they even need a grant? Because depending on the assets, they might not. Often in a spouse couple, the first one to die, you generally don't actually need a grant because so many things are joint. The house is joint. Most of the bank accounts are joint. Any life insurance or RRSP sort of thing, those come outside of the estate. The executor doesn't usually touch them because there's a designated beneficiary on them. So often the first of the couple to die doesn't generally need one unless there are assets in that person's sole name. So it's on the second one that you'll need one. And so they've got to decide, figure out, do they actually need a grant to do the job? Because if you don't, you don't need to get one. Don't do it. It's just time and money. Collecting the assets. Banks are very difficult these days. So that is a frustration for executors. Figure out debts, taxes. You've got to file a tax return. Then you need to account to your beneficiaries saying, here's what I started with. Here's what's come in, what's gone out. Here's what I've got left. If the beneficiaries say okay, then you can distribute. And you just want to make sure you're not offside of CRA. There's two types of clearance certificates you can get. There is the clearance certificate to date of death, which CRA confirms this deceased has paid all the way up to date of death. And then there is post-death clearance certificates. You can do an interim one because you're doing a big distribution, or you can do what's called final clearance, which is this deceased owes you nothing more and you are agreeing, I'm off the hook as an executor. So CRA can be unfun to deal with, and they also delay the process because they take forever.
So it's a pretty significant job to be an executor. So I guess I have a question kind of as a follow-up to that. Is there somewhere that if I were an executor, I could go and I would have a list, like a checkbox list of all of these things? Or is this where the legal advice comes in?
So yes and no. The Estate Administration Act gives a schedule of the core duties of an executor. And that is the act by which a court would measure if you've done it. Most of the estate administration lawyers in town have a checklist. Here are all the things you need to do. Do you want us as your lawyer to do them? Do you want to do them? And you can, as executor, decide one way or the other. I will say, no good deed goes unpunished. Being an executor is a lot of work. So just because you've been appointed as an executor in a will does not mean you have to do it. You are entitled to renounce. So generally in my wills, we will always have an alternate. But technically they can renounce. And for those people like Melissa earlier, who I'm going to assume is giving everything to ECF.
Thanks, Melissa.
Yeah. it's my understanding that ECF actually is hiring someone to administer estates in which they're the main beneficiary. Because I often say to my will planning clients, if you're giving everything to a charity, the charity should have to do the work to administer your estate. So let's let them appoint whomever they want to do that. And that's becoming more and more common, particularly with there's a certain demographic of people who have never married, they don't have kids, their family is of their age, so who knows if they're going to outlive them or not. They don't have anyone to give their money to or to do their estate. So to be honest, charities are going to benefit quite greatly from that. So why shouldn't they do a bit of the work to get that benefit?
This is very helpful. Thank you. I know I've already mentioned that, but I'm just kind of fascinated. So a follow-up question. As Laura mentioned, there's a lot of unique vocabulary in estate administration. For us folk who are not lawyers and entrenched in this language, can you explain what probate means?
Yes. So probate, most people do have an understanding of probate, and that is you send the will to the court and say, I have been the person appointed. I am going to administer this estate. Here are the beneficiaries. And I've told them that I am making this application. And then the court will review that and give you what's called a grant of probate. The grant is actually technically a court order saying, yes, you're the person in charge, off you go. You can also, when you die without a will, your person to administer it will need a grant of administration. It's the same thing. You say, this person has died, no will. I would like to administer the estate. Here would be the beneficiaries, and I've given them notice. And the court will be like, excellent, off you go. People generally, as with executors and administrators, they'll just say executors. People, even with a grant of technically administration, they'll just say probate. People actually have quite a bit of knowledge about estates And like, you know, you have to have a will. You need probate to do things. You have to read the will. There's no such thing as reading of the will. You get a copy of the will
when someone applies. So TV has lied to us?
Oh, my goodness. American television has lied to you.
How disappointing.
I know. Although I did just watch Men with Brooms and they have a quote reading of the will and it's a video of the deceased saying, this is what I've done.
Amazing movie, that's, by the way.
Yeah. Fantastic. Yes. Good old pal. So it's not, reading of the will is not real. I've done it because people want it done, but it's not a requirement. But yeah, probate is generally the court saying, this is the last will of the deceased. This person has been appointed. These beneficiaries have been noticed. Off you go. You don't always need a grant of probate. You will need a grant of probate if there's land solely in the deceased's name and if the banks require it. Most banks have a threshold. It's about $20,000, but it does vary from bank to bank. That if the deceased had assets above that threshold, you will need a grant. If they're below that threshold, you might be able to get away with what's called an indemnity, which is the executor saying, I indemnify the bank against any claims for wrongdoing by them giving me that money.
Okay.
So first, you got to figure out if you actually need probate. Because if you don't need it, don't waste the time and money.
Yeah. So typically larger estates.
Yes.
So generally, how long would you say it takes to administer an estate? And I'm going to imagine this varies given the size of somebody's estate, the complexity, but is there kind of an average?
There used to be what's called the executor's year. And it used to be on the sort of most average estate, a house, some bank accounts, that it would take a year. However, there, as I said earlier, the banks will take however long they take, and there's very little rushing them. At some point, I will take a run at that in court because we're all getting very frustrated by that process and how long they're taking. It's unreasonable, especially when they freeze accounts. And so basic things like the mortgage or utilities can't be paid. That's a problem. But so the executor's year is the traditional from generally getting your grant to final distribution, which used to be a year. Banks will delay you. CRA will delay you. So often we do a very large interim distribution and we hold back just enough for final taxes and stuff. So on a $200,000 estate, let's say that the house has already been sold, so it's gone, we just have cash left, I might keep back $20,000 and distribute the $180,000 while we wait for CRA to give us final clearance. CRA will delay you far longer than the executor's year. Nothing you can do about it.
Okay. So all things considered equal, kind of a year.
I'd actually say more like two.
Two, okay.
Two from death to final distribution, if there are no issues.
Right. So the process takes a while, even when things go smoothly. But Diane Christie, ECF's executive assistant to the CEO, would like to know.
What complications can arise to make an executor's job harder?
The main ones are, the deceased actually is very behind on their taxes. That will delay you and take a while. Executors are entitled to employ professionals, so hire an accountant and pay them. They are worth their weight in gold on that one. Just get it done. That's one. The other one that is very common now is when the deceased did not adequately provide for their dependents. So this is for spouses, minor children, or adult children who are unable to earn a livelihood due to a physical or mental disability. And they have the right to bring what's called a family maintenance and support claim. That will delay you like nobody's business. Now, on a family maintenance and support claim, an executor is technically neutral. All they have to do is provide accounting information and update on what's in the estate. But often, executors are also beneficiaries. So as a beneficiary, they can take an active role, but not as an executor. But that will delay you. FMS claims generally take about a year to resolve if you don't need to litigate the whole thing. So in Alberta, the Wilson Succession Act does require estate litigation to consider alternative dispute resolution, mediation, arbitration, etc. And I was, in fact, just on a 10-hour mediation yesterday to resolve the distribution of an estate. So mediation is done quite regularly in Edmonton for this sort of thing. So I highly recommend that because it is faster and less costly. to get it done. Litigation will eat up the estate very quickly.
So mediation is ideal.
I highly recommend mediation, and I say that as an estate litigator. I make my money on litigating estates, but litigating an estate serves no one. Mediating an estate gets better results.
So as a follow-up to kind of something you touched on earlier, we had a question that was asked online. What do we need to know if one of the beneficiaries is on AISH?
Yes. So AISH will automatically tell you that person has a family maintenance and support claim. But you need to design their gifts in the will. Hopefully your estate planning lawyer did design them well. But if they're going to bring a family maintenance and support claim, you want to design any settlement to preserve their AISH. AISH has very restrictive parameters on what someone can own and still receive AISH. And while AISH's monthly payment is, frankly, laughably small, that's not actually the biggest benefit of AISH. It's all of the other healthcare stuff, the prescriptions, the everything like that. So you do not want to in any way make that AISH go away. AISH is incredibly important. So you have to craft any settlement to ensure that that AISH is protected. So that's, honestly, that's when you need a lawyer.
I was just going to say, this sounds like perhaps if you have a family member that, you know, this applies to, that you're going to want to seek advice from a lawyer and not maybe an online will kit.
An online will kit will certainly put more money in my pocket to litigate, because the estate planning lawyers who are participating in Wills Week and Estate Administration Week, they all know how to plan for someone with an AISH issue. So honestly, cut off the problem at the planning stage. Go and see, you need to see a lawyer if you have someone on AISH, because that lawyer will craft your estate plan in such a way to not jeopardize the AISH. I really highly recommend that, just because it is such an important piece and you can cause a lot of problems if you don't get good advice to plan.
So next question, what are some myths about who should or who can be the executor of an estate?
So it does not need to be your firstborn. It does not need to be the boy.
I assume this is a piece perhaps that you see frequently.
Yes. Okay. It's very common that obviously the eldest son has to be the executor. No, the person who's going to get it done needs to be the executor. And you would prefer, if you have two potentials and one is in Alberta and one is not, pick the Alberta one. We have an old system where if your executor resides out of province, you A, can't use the wonderful surrogate digital service, which gets you a grant within 3-ish weeks. And B, you might have to put up a bond, which is, think about, you know, contractors, they put up a bond in case something goes wrong, you have that money to go against. It's old school, back in the day when it was so much harder to enforce an Alberta judgment in another province. It's much easier to do that now. I have done one bond in my entire decade practicing. It's very rare to do them, but it's a consideration. So if you have two potentials and one of them doesn't live in Alberta, don't pick them. The other thing is, do not pick more than one, or pick an odd number and give a majority rules clause. Okay. Because all of the people you choose have to go to the bank to sign the documents. And that's just complicated. If you pick someone who lives in Edmonton and someone who lives in Calgary, well, they've got to get together. And that's effort and annoyance, frankly, because the banks, you can do it once and then the bank will lose it. So you've got to do it again. So I would severely caution against appointing more than one executor. It's a hard job and coordinating everyone is difficult. Do not pick all three of your children saying, oh, they're not going to fight. They'll fight. Because at some point, grief is going to catch up to them. And grief makes everyone irrational for a solid year. So let's not do that. Don't cause more issues than you need to. Like, your death's already going to turn people topsy-turvy. Don't also add these potential for conflict.
So it's clear that choosing the right executor is vital. which brings us to a great question from Mike Lewis, ECF's manager of people and culture.
Given the amount of work and the importance of getting things done properly, I'd like to know what traits or skills I should look for when choosing the executor of my estate.
The biggest one is someone who will actually do the work. Procrastination is not your friend. The second one is someone who will keep good records. Because the executor has to account to the beneficiaries, it's so much more helpful if they've kept records of what they've done. Because at the end of the day, it's so much easier to just be like, oh yeah, here's the book where I just wrote down everything I did and a general estimate of time. Here you go, beneficiaries. Are we okay? Yes, great. Those are the two main things.
Very helpful. I think that's also a helpful piece to note for folks. Okay, thank you so much for coming in today, Victoria.
Yeah, anytime.
This has been great. and quite frankly, very helpful to me. So, selfishly, I'm taking a lot of this information away.
Excellent, excellent.
So thank you so much.
Yeah.
Thank you to Sydney Stewart and Victoria Jones for that wonderful educational discussion. And thank you to our listeners and colleagues who submitted such great questions.
Victoria will be presenting two sessions as part of ECF's Estate Administration Week, including Estate Planning 101 and General Executor Duties.
These sessions are free, and you can find a link to all the information and how to RSVP in our show notes.
And you'll also be able to find links to the latest on our blog and to upcoming granting deadlines and funding opportunities at ECF.
Well, Andrew, that brings us to the end of the show.
Thanks for sharing your time with us.
We hope you enjoyed it and learned something new. And if you did, please share it with everyone you know.
And if you have a moment, please leave us a review on Apple Podcasts. This is a great way to support the show and help new listeners find us.
Thanks again for tuning in. We've been your hosts, Anna Alfonso
and Andrew Paul.
Until next time.
The Well Endowed Podcast is produced by Edmonton Community Foundation
and is edited by Andrew Paul.
You can visit our website at thewellendowpodcast.com.
Subscribe to us on iTunes or wherever you listen to your podcasts.
Special thanks to Octavo Productions for our theme music.
And as always, don't forget to visit Edmonton Community Foundation at ecfoundation.org.